Welcome to Syntax. We got a really good episode for you today about coding with and for Shopify. We've done a couple episodes on Shopify, but Shopify always amazes me that it is this entire world of people who not exclusively develop for it, but there's a lot of people who are like their entire job is just working with Shopify themes, Shopify apps, Shopify integrations. And it's a pretty wild world, especially because e-commerce is one of the biggest industries on the internet. And I always find it really interesting to sort of dip into that. So I conjured up two of the smartest Shopify people I know, Ann Thomas and Trudy McNabb. I taught with Ann and Trudy when I was at HackerU, doing part-time classes and doing boot camps. And they've both been doing Shopify for many, many years. I'll let them talk about that. But welcome, Ann and Trudy. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Ann, you can start. Give us a rundown of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. So I've been a front-end developer for about 15 years now. That seems a bit crazy to say, but I've been through the Flash times, the like jQuery times, and then the framework eras. So I feel like I've sort of seen it all. Yeah. And then I got into Shopify sometime around 2014, I guess. I built my first theme and I was working for an agency and that kind of stuff. And then I actually worked for about almost 5 years at an actual theme company. So we were building themes to sell on the theme store. So I was there for, 5 years and then left in 2020, the great resignation. And and then started a consultancy doing store audits and then had this idea about maybe building this kind of interesting app and reached out to Trudy, who is brilliant. And I was like, she'd be interested in partnering, and luckily she was. So we launched our app Design Packs and we just had our third year anniversary. So That's me.
Wow. And Design Packs is like we'll go a little bit more into it, but just to kind of frame of what it is, it's a drag and drop theme maker for Shopify. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, essentially it adds new widgets and layouts to your existing theme.
Okay, awesome. And Trudy, who are you?
Who am I? Well, okay, so prior to 2015, I was a mainframe system programmer at a bank. And then I took one of the part-time Rails courses at HackerU. And I kind of decided I wanted to see if I could go into web development and do my own thing. So then I ended up quitting my job and taking the boot camp, which Wes was my teacher for.
Guys,
that was a long time ago.
Yeah, everything I know about front end, I know from Wes. And then me and another student from that class started an agency right out of the boot camp called Up at Five because we're morning people. And then we were sort of doing anything, but then we kind of quickly pivoted into just doing Shopify. So from probably around 2015, 2016, I've just been building custom Shopify sites. And then Anne came to me and she was like, do you want to build an app? And I was like, I definitely do.
Awesome. So yeah, obviously both of you have probably 15, 20 years of Shopify experience between the two of you. So excited to talk about that today. So I thought we would structure this as like, let's talk about like themes, building themes for Shopify. Then we'll talk about Shopify apps and integrations and whatnot, because I know that's a wild world of nickel and dime until you're paying like $600 a month. And then we'll talk about design packs probably throughout the entire thing, because obviously that's where a lot of your expertise is, and we'll see where we go for it. So Shopify themes, can you give us a rundown of like, how do you build a theme for Shopify?
Oh, I mean, it's Liquid. So Liquid is sort of the secret sauce. So for anyone that comes from like a WordPress background, like in the same way that you would have like sort of little WordPress snippets that you're pulling in. Shopify has a similar type thing where you're pulling in information to your templates. But I remember the first like Shopify theme that I built, it was very basic. And a lot of times actually similar to WordPress as well, where you sort of start with maybe like an existing theme and you kind of create your own, build off of it, and you learn from that. And then you kind of can go and build your own from there. When we were building themes at Out of the Sandbox, that's the theme company that I was working at, the design and development would take at least 6 months because everything had to be very specific in order to get it into the theme store. The level of curation was very high. It's not like they would just accept anything. So there's very specific rules that you have to follow when it comes to settings, how things work, even the way that things are labeled and named. But the actual development of themes, I wouldn't say is like wildly complicated. Would you agree, Trudy?
Yeah, it's like liquid templating, HTML, CSS, anything else you want to do, but that's the basis.
Cool. And do you feel like you have like enough control with Liquid? I did a ton of Magento work in my past life as a Magento developer. And then when we did our syntax site, I got into the Liquid templates a little bit on Shopify. And I was really amazed at how much was there, but I didn't get any deeper than just changing some values. So do you really have full control inside of those templates?
I think yes, because as from the agency perspective, like Anne was dealing with the theme, so she had to follow sort of the guidelines and everything. From an agency perspective, my favorite thing is like making Shopify do things that you don't think it can do. So I'd be like integrating like Vue.js or React into just one template. And they also have what they call the Storefront API, which is essentially most of the data that's available in Liquid, but in an API, which sometimes works better with React or Vue.js or something. So do anything with Shopify. It just, if you have the know-how, but you can integrate anything into it.
Interesting, because I guess there's kind of two themes. Like you can make your own theme. Like that's what I've done in the past. Many years ago, I built a WordPress website, and they said we also want a Shopify theme. So I like was sharing styles between the two, and like you can do whatever you want. Like Trudy, you can run React inside of there, but if you want to be able to sell it and allow people to use it, it must be very strict, right?
For the Shopify theme store, you can also sell it on ThemeForest or,
interesting.
Individually, yeah.
Is ThemeForest still kicking? Is that a place where people go still?
I think so. That and Creative Market. But so it's interesting. I don't usually recommend themes from there, mainly because the level of curation is so high. So you're not going to get that, whether you're not going to have the same requirements from those off site ones. So
it's a crapshoot.
The only exception to that are the ones that already have themes on the theme store and are also selling them off their own site. Cause there are those.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause we dipped into ours really quickly and Scott changed a few things, and like we were selling out of a specific t-shirt and it would just change the word to unavailable. And I was like, that should say sold out, you know? And like I dove deep into these Liquid templates. And it's kind of funny when you're diving into something new that you're not really comfortable with, but I could not figure out where the hell to change that one word of unavailable. And it's probably, maybe you can tell me, but it's probably in some like internationalization API somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it's just the localization.
Change it. Okay. Shit. Oh, it's probably really easy. I'm embarrassed now. It still says unavailable.
Liquid is not the most beautiful, and it's very confusing to look at before you know what you're doing.
Yeah, I had to copy and paste it into my VS Code to get syntax highlighting for it, because I was like, I need to have some color to let me know what's what here. But, once you get your handle on it, it does feel like a familiar-esque templating language, right? You can reason about it once you understand it. Yeah.
And they're putting a lot more before, like Trudy and I both remember the olden days before they had like GitHub integration, in when building themes. And now they have like a VS Code extension, which is really great that they're improving all the time. So I think they are actually trying to put a lot of work into the dev tooling, which is really nice to see because they do rely on the partner ecosystem quite a bit. So it's nice to get that from them. Like, ooh, it makes our life easier.
Yeah, totally.
I have most of my experience in Liquid from doing email marketing, because anytime I need to customize one of my emails that goes out, like, for example, I don't want to put a coupon code for a course if somebody has already bought that course, right? So that's just a simple if statement, and I can pull data from their profile. You can put their name inside of it, right? And it's kind of funky, because coming from a JavaScript language, it's not the same. You're often piping values in. And I believe that's because Toby, who's CEO and founder of Shopify, was a Rails developer. Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more Railsy.
I think that with Liquid specifically, they thought that it would be so easy that designers could use it. So they made a bunch of choices that are counterintuitive to a developer's mind. Like, for instance, the index starts at 1. They later added index 0.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, there's a for loop.index and then a for loop.index 0.
Oh, wow. Man, really? Yeah. And can you make your own methods in, or are you limited to what they have?
You can't, no.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, even creating like working with arrays is kind of funny and weird. And like the idea of like an object doesn't really, like you can kind of fake it a little bit, but it's very, it feels a little hacky,
I have a blog that was called Code Shopify before they made me change the URL, and the most popular was how to make an array in Liquid. Like it just got the most number of things.
Gosh.
It is a treasure trove though. Trudy has these amazing tutorials. It's called too many tabs.xyz.
XYZ, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's the by far my most popular blog post every single day is how to comment in React. You know,
it's
so simple, but it like everybody has to learn that, and everybody forgets it.
Yeah.
That's great. So, what does the local dev experience look like then? I know you noticed you mentioned that there's like VS Code and Git integration, but like let's say you were starting a brand new Shopify theme, like what would your process look like for tackling it in like a modern way?
Well, recently they've come out with the CLI for theme development, which is very helpful. So you can just sort of spin up a theme, which I guess is based on the Dawn theme. Am I correct, Anne? Mm-hmm. And you can connect it in your Shopify admin directly to a GitHub repo. And that kind of connects it, which the good thing is about that, which this is all kind of new. It also, like, if the merchant makes changes in the theme editor, it also automatically updates it to the GitHub. So you can keep it.
Oh, that's nice.
A lot better. In theory, it's fabulous and I love it. In practice, every single merchant will somehow disconnect it from the GitHub and you won't know when they did that.
Once you start getting merchants involved with things, your beautiful dev process can kind of break down because previously the only way to sort of upload a new theme to a theme store would be to upload a zip file. That's it. Whereas now they have this Git integration, which is great. But if you duplicate that theme, it no longer is connected. Mm. So,
that's crazy. I always remember with WordPress, I would like turn off the theme editor, like which is wild that WordPress even lets you edit your theme from the admin dashboard, and you can break the dashboard.
A straight up PHP file.
And like, but people would just like tweak that and then your version control is out of date, right? Or you don't notice and you push a new version, you overwrite their changes. And yeah, that can get really messy. But what about like local dev? Is that a thing? Is there like live reload? When I did it, it was simply just copy paste it in, save it, go back to the page and refresh. That whole cycle was very slow.
Yeah, so the CLI actually has, like, it'll create, like, a local URL for you to kind of spin that up. So then it's sort of a matter of, like, keeping all of your branches. Like, a lot of people will have, like, a dev and a production branch, you know, classic. And then so you have your local. It works really well. I often find, again, because there's often that disconnect with GitHub, the alternative method to still be able to work locally is to use something called ThemeKit, which is basically you have like a config.yml, .yaml file, and then that will connect you directly so you can push to the store. The only downside with that, as Trudy was saying, is that it doesn't have that backwards compatibility. Mm-hmm. And so all of the content for pages and like the content for sections is saved in these JSON files. And what can happen is if you accidentally save that JSON file or do a theme deploy, it's replaced with the old version if the merchant's been editing things at the same time you're working on stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the most practical way to do it is use ThemeKit and like work on a development theme and then just do all your work there and then publish that theme. And then next time you go like duplicate the live theme and then work on that and publish it. That's like the most practical way right now. The CLI is beautiful, but you can't trust some people.
I was going to say, is this something that Shopify is working on or improving, or is this just a way of life there?
Well, the GitHub CLI is the improvement.
Okay.
Yeah. And it really works well. And like for me with as an agency, I can like tell my clients, like train them to understand how it works and be like, make changes to the dev one, because I'll usually have two connected. The problem comes in when like an app, they'll like email an app and be like, oh, something's not working with the app. And the app company will come in and just do a duplicate of the theme and make changes because they don't want to touch the live theme. So I haven't found a way to like get everybody on board with not disconnecting the GitHub.
Okay. And what about like typings or anything like that? Like, is there autocomplete in when you're working in VS Code and you have like product dot, does it autocomplete like all the possible fields for you there? Yeah. That's nice. Can you get like just a Shopify store like full of all the possible combinations, you know, like a shirt with like something that's sold out or different variants that are complicated, you know, like you kind of have to throw the kitchen sink at all the possible different layouts to dev against.
Yeah. So there's a couple ways to do that. The, when you're actually setting up a new development store. So if you have a partner account, you don't have to pay for stores that you're working on. You just set up like a dev store. Yeah. And they now have the option where you can populate it with like example products and that kind of thing. So previously the way that we used to do it was having to upload a CSV that had all those different variations. So you can still do that. And I still have like my go-to one with like, you know, all the different variants, but that's usually the way that you do it.
There's lots of oddities with Shopify.
What do you hate about Shopify themes?
Oh, so many. No, I would say the blog frustrates me, mainly because I'm dealing with something right now that all I want to do is get blog posts, like a loop of blog posts that are written by a certain author. And you'd think that would be super straightforward to do, right? But it's not. You can loop through all the blog posts. That's fine. But there's actually a limit. You can only do 50. So it stops after that. So the only real way to do it is I'm going to have to use the Storefront API and like pull in the blog posts based on the authors and then render them with JavaScript instead, as opposed to using Liquid. Mm. And it just feels frustrating.
Yeah.
Generally, looping in Shopify is often because there's no sort of where clause. So sometimes the answer is like loop through every single product. And if you have like thousands of products in the store, that's just not a practical answer.
Oh, man. And that all of that. So all Liquid happens server side. And then if there's something you can't do, you have to pick it up once the page is loaded, hit the API, come back, and then somehow additionally template out that extra markup, right?
Yeah.
And what do you usually use like a React for that, or are you just vanilla JavaScript?
Depending on the complication, if it's something literally that's just like displaying blog post, I'm just using vanilla.js.
Yeah. If it's something like a little bit more reactive, I'll use Vue.js. Because you can use the CDN, so it's really just, it's easy to bring onto just one page.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's great. And what about, have you dipped into Hydrogen at all? So Hydrogen is like Shopify's headless CMS. So like if you want to build a totally custom experience, which is incredibly difficult because there are so many little edge cases in building e-commerce websites,
so many,
you know, simply making your own cart from scratch is like not something I wish on anyone. But Have you dipped into Hydrogen at all?
I have not. Neither has Anne. No.
No. And we've had internal discussions about.
We have opinions.
We have opinions. Yeah. It's just they were really pushing headlesses and probably still are as this like everyone needs headless. It's the, you know, site speed, everything. Da, da, da. You can have, you know, custom URLs. So therefore it's better for SEO and this sort of thing. Yeah. But their unfortunate reality is that talking about like building a custom checkout and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You need to have a dedicated dev team that knows what's going on, that's able to build you things rapidly, that's able to support you. And if you don't have the budget for that, it's a really not a great move to do. Yeah.
And like, I imagine you give up. It's the same thing with WordPress. Is you build a headless WordPress site, you're giving up the entire ecosystem of plugins that have a UI. Like, so you guys run design packs and you build components that you can slot into your thing, right? So you would be giving up all of the options that you have. That annoying little spinner that comes up on every single Shopify website, you're giving that up, right?
Yeah. You're also giving up the content management system that's built in, that already is there, exists in Shopify. So a lot of people, you know, they'll use like Contentful or whatever, all the various options. But then you're having to like completely rebuild that aspect of it too. So
And like you mentioned, beyond just having a full dedicated team to build, you probably need a full or at least a team to support long term, because you ship anything headless a year from now, who knows what? It doesn't have that same guarantee of working that you would if you had a managed Shopify UI.
Yeah, that's true. Like, you have to have it like whatever. And also like the content management, it's like you can't just swap out your banners every single day unless you have unless you're getting a dev to do that or somebody who's comfortable. But a lot of people just aren't comfortable like going into the code. I haven't come across a use case apart from maybe the URLs and certain things that I can't just build into a liquid theme. Like if there's like a really unique experience, I just build it in React or Vue on that one page. And then everything else is standard and you don't have to like rebuild everything from scratch.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's the same thing with the WordPress world as well, is that like, you can opt in. You have React islands or JavaScript islands where certain parts of the application are built in these frameworks and the rest of it could be entirely server rendered. Are people building like full websites in Shopify? Because I know there's like pages and a blog, but I often still see people have like they have their app, they have their marketing site, and then they have their Shopify website. Did you, in your experience, ever build just the whole website in Shopify?
Oh yeah, always. Yeah? I've actually built sites that don't even have an e-commerce component.
Wow.
Yes, me as well. Yeah.
Who's asking for that?
Just it because the theme editor experience, people really like it. Like it's a lot more user-friendly. Not as user-friendly as some things, but I would argue more user-friendly than WordPress. So it feels a little more Squarespace-y.
Okay.
I did one for the Frankfurt Book Market, which it was like the content management system was good because each book was considered like a product, but they didn't actually sell it. It was just on the site for people to see. So it sort of like had the same backend ideas, like an e-commerce site, but they just weren't selling anything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then you're not linking things together because we've talked about this many times. So maybe you have your CMS is like a Sanity or something like that. And then you've got your Shopify somewhere between the two of those. You probably have an input in your Sanity that says Shopify product ID, right? And you're linking that from whatever. And if you do want to display how many are left or all the different variations, then you're going to have to make external API calls back and forth. So I could see that being a benefit.
The one thing is like if people have like a really extensive and robust blogging system, you can't really get that done in Shopify. Like you can have a basic blog, but you can't do what you can do in WordPress. So sometimes people will have a WordPress blog, depending on how important it is to their business.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's talk about apps and integrations as well. So one thing we've learned by having the Syntax Swag Store, by the way, you can buy this syntax.fm, go to our Swag Store. It's run on Shopify.
It's Shopify.
Yeah. One thing we learned is that like when there is not a feature, you gotta go to the app store in Shopify and you gotta build something. And this is a whole third-party ecosystem of apps that people have built. to do it. So one example is we want to generate a whole bunch of coupon codes and then give them out to different people. So we had to use some, there's no way to mass generate coupon codes in Shopify. So we had to like get some plugin to do it. So Design Packs, that is a Shopify app. Is that what that is?
Yes.
How does that work? That's not just Liquid templates, right?
Well, it kind of, we like to, so it's interesting because a lot of people do have this, we've gotten pushback from merchants saying like, oh, I already have so many apps and da da da, I don't want to slow down my store and this kind of thing, which is fair because I definitely run into apps where they're loading, like the one app is loading two different ancient versions of jQuery.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know. So that can happen where, you know, you add like 30, 40 apps, all the apps, and they're going to add a lot of cruft to your store. But we like to think about Design Packs as not necessarily an app, but more of like a section delivery tool, because within Shopify, the way that a theme is made up is these different sections. And so those are the little widgets and layouts and that kind of thing. So on average, most themes come with like, I don't know, 10 to 15 sections, and that's it. So if you don't have what you need there, you're kind of stuck. You need to pay a developer to build a custom section, or you need to figure out how to do it yourself. So what our app does is it adds in directly into the Liquid theme code new sections for your store.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And so a lot of these integrations, are these things that people are setting up their entire, like they have a business to sell an integration? Is there a whole market of people building paid integrations?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Who's I always ask this, like every time you get into one of these like really niche areas, you always find out like there's a couple like millionaires in the space that just like
big
made
dogs,
bank. Yeah. Like there's some guy that made guitar riffs and sold them on a stock sound website and who has like a Ferrari now, you know? Like is there anybody like that in the Shopify app store? Please don't tell me it's the whoever created the spinny wheel.
They probably are. That is what
I bet they do very, very well.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think the really cool thing about it is that you can have one or two devs and have like an entire SaaS business on the Shopify app store. The one that always comes to mind because they're Canadian is Bold. They have quite a few different apps. I don't know how crazy well they're doing. I don't think that anyone has IPO'd yet. But
it's interesting that like Wes mentioned, in any of these communities, there's always these niche like situations where people are making real money off of them. And it goes to show, you know, a lot of people, when we do our podcast, we talk about different career paths. There's certainly a major career path just by getting really good at this kind of stuff and getting your stuff into the marketplace, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I don't know about Trudy, you can speak to this as well, but the biggest sort of mind shift for me when I was getting into Shopify was coming from just a purely web development background. I had to learn so much about just e-commerce in general. Like, okay, what do people actually need? You know, conversion rate optimization, just about the whole, it's so much more than, you know, I used to be agency where a site would live for 3 months and then it would be taken down. So that's been the thing.
Yeah, you gotta have to like understand like the business aspect of it as well, right? Because that's the thing with these things is that if you are helping somebody make money or helping them make more money, like my email newsletter subscription is silly expensive, but everybody pays the bill because it makes you money, right? So you gotta think a little bit more about the business aspects behind these things. I'm just looking at this Bold. So Bold they have a subscription product and it's $50 a month and 1% of orders. So they can scrape 1% off of your order. So $100 a month subscription, they get a buck from that. That's pretty sweet.
I will say some people that come over from like WordPress or what have you, they get a little sticker shock when they come into Shopify because they're like, why is this so expensive? Why am I spending this much money? But to your point, it's because you're running your business off of it. This is making you money at the same time. It's not just a, you know, a brochure site where people are going to find out your store hours. This is, you're actually selling things through here.
Yeah, totally. Can we go deeper on Design Packs and like what it really gives you? 170 expert built layouts. How does that all work?
Yeah. So essentially, when I worked at the theme company, a lot of times we would get these support tickets because we had 7 different themes and people would say, oh, I love this theme. I like this, you know, this section, it looks great. But I also like this section from this other theme. Can't I just mix and match? I want to be able to have everything all in one theme. And so that's essentially what we've created. It's like little extra Lego pieces for your like existing Lego set. So, and what we've tried to do is, because I do know all of the very specific settings and how to make sure everything's integrated properly with existing themes, they just merge in as if they've always been there. And we make sure that the settings aren't overwhelming in terms of what you can change, but still give people enough control that they can match their branding, make sure everything looks seamless. And we keep on releasing new sections. We also have templates as well as the sections. And those are pre-built pages. So sales pages, landing pages, about pages, FAQ. And so someone can add those and they're pre-configured. So they just have to hop in, add their own images and content, and then boom, there you go.
Also, we really lucked out because about 6 months after we launched the our app, Shopify changed the way that themes were built. So prior to store 1.0 or whatever, they you could only have like flexible sections on the homepage. So our sections mostly were just for the homepage. But then 6 months later, they finally revealed sections everywhere. So now so essentially turned our app from like something that you could put on the homepage to a page builder.
Nice. Yeah. Wow.
That's great.
Yeah. Did you all know that was coming, or was that a happy surprise? Yeah.
They had announced it 5 years previous, so we were not going to go.
We had hoped that it was coming depending. At some
point. That's crazy. And so do you have to run, I know some Shopify apps have to run their own servers to run their own logic. Do you have to run servers, or is it simply just something like you can ship the whole application as its own thing?
No, we run servers. Well, we're running on Heroku. So we have like a Shopify app that like does the authentication with the store and does the billing and all of those sorts of things. Like it's not a very complicated app for that reason, because most of the logic is in the sections, but.
Yeah. Okay. And how does billing work? Do you have to run your own billing? Do you take credit cards, or does like Shopify just give you a cut?
No, there's a billing API. So we just kind of send them like the amount, the interval or whatever, and then take care of it.
And does Shopify take a cut of that as well? I assume so.
Not anymore.
No,
they used
really?
To, and then they got rid of that.
Yeah. Also, about 6 months into our app, they were taking 20% off the top at the beginning when we just launched. And then now they don't, unless you make over $1 million, then they start taking a cut.
Wow. That's great.
Awesome of them. Yeah.
Same thing with themes as well.
Really? Oh. Man, that's great, because like they probably realize like, they want people building stuff for free for them, you know, like essentially like people are adding features to Shopify. And if they can make money on that, then go for it.
Yeah. On that note, I used to always describe us being kind of like a little remora fish on a shark, where, you know, we have to be aware that we're building in the Shopify ecosystem and we're building our business on this larger business. But honestly, these days, I think about it more of like mutualism, because it's mutually benefit. It goes both ways. It's not like we're just feeding off of Shopify. The partners bring a lot to the ecosystem as well.
Yeah. Has anyone ever been like Sherlocked? Do you know what that phrase means?
No.
Let me look it up. So there was an app on Mac OS many years ago that did kind of like the Finder pop-up tool called Sherlock. And when they released the pop-up thing in Mac OS, they got Sherlocked, meaning like their entire app was made redundant because they built it right into the feature. So Amazon Basics does it as well. Well, a top providing thing, why don't we just build that into our product ourselves? Yeah. So have you ever seen apps get Sherlocked like that?
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which ones? Do you have any examples of some?
So what often, I'll caveat this with saying that like what often happens with Shopify is that they'll build something that people have been asking for, that apps have been providing that service for a while.
Yeah.
But oftentimes they'll build like an API for it specifically. And so it's still not super easy for people to use, or they'll have a really basic free app that does very basic things. But the most recent one I can think of recently are like stacked discounts and subscriptions.
Okay. Yeah.
Because previously there was no way to natively do subscriptions in Shopify. And then they changed that.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
However, I can't think of an example of, like, I can't think of one, I'm sure there are, of things that have completely gone away, because oftentimes the apps that are offering those service will offer a bit more, like, than the basic yeah. that Shopify's mm-hmm. doing. So,
yeah. And sometimes in the case of, they had a free product reviews app. But then there are, of course, a ton of competitors that were also offering reviews and this kind of thing. And what they've actually done is they've deprecated the free Shopify reviews app. So that's just how, so it's the kind of the opposite.
Yeah. Userland was doing it better. Man. Huh.
And like in that example, where does that data live? Like reviews, does Shopify have the ability to store like custom metadata, or do those yes. reviews sit somewhere else?
Tree just got so excited.
I know. Saving to JSON file somewhere.
Yeah. So like Shopify has actually had meta fields for like as long as I've been working on it, but you literally, it was very difficult. It wasn't like user-friendly, like the merchants couldn't really access it. And then they came out with new meta fields that merchants can access, and they're a lot easier to use. And then they came out with meta objects. And so they're really, I mean, in some instances, it is and historically saved on like the app servers. But now yeah. Shopify is encouraging and made it easier to store it in meta objects, which is like just kind of flexible data that you could use on anywhere in the store. So that's what they're pushing for, which I think is a good idea, because then again, that'll make apps faster, because you're like living off of Shopify's like content delivery service instead of like, you know, trying to serve it yourself. But yeah, I'm obsessed with meta objects. It's my favorite thing.
And can you make like a custom UI? I guess that's probably, does design packs make UIs that store in that type of thing? Like you said, like an image upload and maybe you type into a box because you have like a banner component. Is that where you're storing that data, or does Shopify have a something else for that?
All like for design packs, all like, with the UI, it's like all of the files are stored on Shopify's file system. We're not storing okay. anything.
Yeah. And then in terms of integrating the metadata and meta objects, because Design Packs is built in a way, again, as if like a custom developer just came in and built it for your theme, mm-hmm. all of that happens directly in the theme editor. So in the same way that you could add in, connect a meta field with a regular section, you can do that with design packs as well.
It's so true. And to give just like sort of a concrete example of like why you might do it, like you could make like FAQs per product and then store each one as a meta object. And then you just connect the meta object. So you don't have to create a different template. You can have different information on the product page without having to like create a separate template for each product.
Yeah.
Okay. And that would just show up as like for the user, it would just show up as a general text interface that, you know, somebody could edit if they needed yeah. to update that stuff. They're not having to get into code.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of akin to, for any WordPress people, like advanced custom fields.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Cool.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm pretty sure I bought my house on advanced custom fields. Like, you know, that was a good one. And that one was like, I think you paid like $39 for, I had it, had a license for like 5 or 6 years. And I think a lot of people learn in the WordPress world is that like you can make a little bit more money doing that type of thing and support yourself. So you can kind of continue things on.
That's I just great. Used Drupal and I had that baked in.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's sweet. What about the downsides of building apps on Shopify? What do you got there?
One thing, probably my biggest complaint, is that they change the APIs on a 6-month basis.
Really?
mostly for developers, like not for the front end stuff, because they it's like you can see that their goal is to keep the front end, like the merchant store, stable. But for they roll out changes to the APIs a lot, and we have to keep up with it. And like last summer, they decided to change their authentication from OmniAuth to OAuth, and gave us 3 weeks to completely update our app.
Whoa, really?
And so when your app or the Shopify apps exist in like a versioned way, you have to stay up to date with the modern version, or do you have to support all versions going back to a certain time? Is it even possible to host a Shopify app with an older version of Shopify?
No. So, well, I mean, at the beginning, they didn't even have versions of some of the APIs, but now they've versioned it. Like when the first, like I used to build Shopify apps for clients prior to, like just private ones, and they didn't, I don't think they had versioning for their APIs for the app. Now they do, but they will deprecate them probably within a year and a year and a half. So you can like, there's a few versions that you can use at any given time, but you have to keep up pretty quickly.
Wow.
Yeah, it makes sense. Like it's a hosted service, you know?
And yeah, right.
When
yeah.
they change.
Yeah, so you have, so that's the thing. But it's good because it forces you to keep up with modern changes, but it's bad because you're always like having to update things all the time.
Yeah.
And it's good for competition too, because it's not wildly difficult to sort of spin up an app and get it in the App Store, but it's more of the maintenance and, you know, making sure that you can handle the technical debt and that kind of thing comes along with it.
Yeah, that's true. And you got to, I guess, do support and make sure everything is up and running.
Support. Oh, that's a whole other
topic. Do you do all the support yourself? Like, yeah. That is, I can't imagine back in my WordPress days, the clients would ask me questions, and like, let alone you selling something where you're letting people do it themselves, you know, and they know just enough to be dangerous. So what kind of stuff do you see there?
I will say the vast majority of the people that we deal with are actually lovely for the most part, but it is very interesting to see some of the questions that come up, because they sometimes aren't necessarily related to even our app. It's more just the Shopify user experience or different things like that.
Yeah.
Overall, it's actually really great feedback too. Like for anyone that has like a SaaS-based business or something like that, you're always looking to get feedback and improve. And so some of the suggestions that people have, like, oh, I'd love a section that does this, or, oh, do you have a setting for this? It's really nice because we're so small, we can just be like, yeah, sure. Yeah. We can do that.
Yeah. And I think at the beginning, we sort of had this idea that people would want really like design opinionated sections. But then it turned out that people really wanted very generic sections with lots of customization options. So it was good to get that feedback, or we would have been going down a path that maybe wasn't really a market fit.
Oh, interesting. So you give them all the knobs to turn. That was actually a question I had, is like, how do you match it to their existing theme? Like, is there variables that get passed in for specific colors, light mode, dark mode, or do you just give them a whole bunch of knobs to turn and they make it look similar to their site?
So there are certain things that we can pull in just based on, you know, we're not overriding all of the like header classes, for example. So we'll be able to like inherit those from the theme. There are other things like color schemes, which we haven't actually like gone down that path too much. But what we try to do is just give specific, like a color here, a color there. And then we're also, our sections have, you can put in your own custom CSS snippets for large screen sizes and small screen sizes. And so that gives us a lot of power on support, because someone will be like, oh, can I do this, this, this? And we've built them in such a way that it makes it really easy to be like, yeah, no problem. Like, we're consistent with all of our class names and that kind of thing across all the sections. So it makes it a lot quicker for that.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite support. If somebody's like, can you make this section look a bit different? I'm like, let me see if I can.
And how does that work? Do they add you into the Shopify? Do they just send you their password? Are you able to reach in?
It's really nice. It used to be that you actually had to create a staff account for their store, but Shopify rolled out this thing called collaborator access.
Yeah.
So as long as they have the app installed, you don't need to send like a code or anything like that. You literally, there's an area in the partner dashboard where you go, you say request store access, and then they just have to approve it.
That's cool. What are the most popular blocks? Do you even have stats on like the most used blocks that you have?
Oh yeah, that'd be interesting.
We do.
we find that a lot of people really like video. So things like, so there's this term UGC in e-commerce, user generated content.
Yeah.
So anything that provides social proof, people really like adding that to their e-commerce store. So video testimonials or like how to videos. So those tend to be quite popular. Slideshows, carousels, you know, the classics.
Yeah, so our top three are video, or banner with a video background, image with text simple, and value icons.
Man, that all tracks.
Value icon, yeah. Where you just, what's value icon?
It's is like icons three, is value? It's like three icons in a row with like some text below it. Which,
yeah, you've seen
again,
it, Wes. Yeah.
Oh,
it's like the UVP, unique value proposition.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have those on Level Up tutorials. I've used those.
Yeah.
Yeah, every website in the world has those. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, it makes sense that that's most popular.
And that's the thing that confused us, because we're like, isn't this part of most themes? Like it is. It's just ours is like more customizable in a lot of ways. But yeah, that's what confused us. We were like, oh, people want something super unique or different, but people actually just want the basics.
And to make them like responsive and whatnot, you ship all the CSS. Does Shopify have any, is there any bundlers, compilers, or anything like that for the code that you ship? Or does that all have to be done before you send it to the Liquid template?
So we do minify things, but actually doing a technique with Liquid, interestingly enough, we don't use any type of like build tool or compilers or anything like that. We're kind of like, was like bespoke artisan coding.
Yeah. Yeah. Straight up.
Yeah. Because I worked with a lot of build tools. And to me, what we're doing, it doesn't really make that much sense, especially they're actually going to be releasing nested blocks soon, where previously all of the blocks that you had to be in this giant sort of like statement. And now those are going to be able to be individual Liquid files. So there's more, everything's basically becoming componentized, which we're so happy about.
Yeah, no kidding. Like we've talked to the folks from, what was it? Builder.io. And, and they're essentially making a kind of a drag and drop CMS, but then you build the React components that are associated with it. And you see WordPress has blocks now. And like, that's certainly the way forward with a lot of these types of things. So it's kind of interesting to see that Shopify is going that way. And you guys are going to be way ahead because you've built how many blocks already?
170.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
So
yeah. You can't even think of 170 different blocks.
No, that's...
We've got ideas galore.
Really? You just have a big list of what people are asking you for? Or are you just always looking at websites?
Both. And working with clients as well.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So they're asking for specific things and you just make it into a reusable block right off the bat.
When we started, we had 10. And we're like, we're going to run out of ideas really quickly. And that is the thing that we have not done.
We have a whole, there's even like on our GitHub, we've got like just different like issues and stuff of like, all these different ideas. And yeah.
That's nice. Great, man. And one totally other thing I want to ask, Trudy, you are a, would you call yourself a digital nomad or just a traveler?
A little bit of a digital nomad, but pre-pandemic, I was going for 3 months. Now I'm just usually going for a month.
Okay. Oh, wow. And you're in Colombia right now?
Yeah, Medellin, Colombia.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you at, like a co-working space?
I am. I'm at the Salina, which is a co-working space that they have around Latin America. I've also worked out of the Mexico City one, too.
That's cool. That is such a cool part about being a web developer is that if you want to go either build an app or freelance and build out Shopify things, you can work from anywhere. It's a lot trickier than I think people think because you got to find a coffee shop and schedules sometimes don't line up, but it's pretty cool that you can travel around the world and still work.
Yeah. My biggest requirement is just like good internet, but at the coffee shops here, the internet's like 320 megabits. So I'm like, that's not, you know.
That's awesome. Do you do any research beforehand to find out the internet?
I usually talk to people like other digital nomads who know, because there's usually digital nomad communities. So I find out that way.
Wicked. Yeah. Go back and listen if you haven't and you're out there and you're interested in this kind of stuff. We did an episode on digital nomading with Eric Sartorius, and he lived in Medellin. He lived in Japan. He's lived everywhere doing this stuff. And he recently moved his permanent base to Portugal. I mean, the guy's from Lansing, Michigan, and now he lives in Portugal full time. So
they have a digital nomad visa. There's a lot more places that are having digital nomad visas that give you like 6 months to a year.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, he's doing that like as a, it's some kind of digital nomad to citizenship thing. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what it is, but it's like a couple of years and then he becomes a citizen of Portugal. So
wow.
That's awesome. I haven't been there, but I've heard really good things.
Anything else about Shopify or Zinepax we didn't touch upon before we wrap things up here?
We also launched another app.
Oh, let's hear about it.
So one of the things that we found was that, great, we've got all these sections, cool, you can use them all different pages, but you can't, there's like the main product area, like think about you're on a product page, right? And then you've got your buy buttons, and then there's also usually some information below that, like maybe an expander or a video or something. Well, sections can't go in there. So we launched an app called Product Blocks that are specifically sections that go into that area.
Oh, and how does that work?
Well, it's just, so Shopify sort of like for app developers offered this new type of thing called like an app block, which is confusing. But they made a way that you can like set code that now just lives in Shopify, and the themes were all updated to allow this. So it's just a specific technology that Shopify created to allow that, that's different from how sections work. And one of the main ones that I was excited about is because I've done this for every single one of my clients is like what we call like fake variants or connected products. Because a lot of times, like if you have like t-shirts, like you'll want to show all the colors, say, on like your collection.
Yeah.
But you want them to look like they're one product. So basically you can just add like little color swatches or like little product images that just are actually links to other products, but they look like variants.
Yeah. Oh, and that will allow you to build out one of those?
Yeah. So that's like one of the like app blocks. So we have we have five app blocks right now. The thing is we have so many ideas, but they have a limitation of, first of all, what, 25 app blocks?
Yep, in total.
Mm-hmm. Per app. But they also have a limitation of 100 kilobytes of liquid.
Oh, and that's not a lot, is it? 100
no.
KB. That's
no.
How many characters is that?
And that's total, too, for like all those 25 possible files. Yeah.
For all 25.
Total.
So that means
total.
Yeah, so you can have 4 kilobytes of liquid per block if you're or around there, something like that.
Oh man, that's not a lot at all. So you're probably trying to keep your class names as small as possible.
Well, if you want to, yeah. we had them all built out. We're like, this is great, amazing. And then we ran into this. So we had to rebuild everything with web components. And so we're actually pulling everything in with JavaScript instead because there's not the same limitation that there is on Liquid.
Oh, that's crazy. So you rebuilt them all in web components. That's really cool. So the web component loads, you go off and fetch some data, and then you can render it on out. What's that experience like? Because we've had a couple people come on the show and talk about building web components instead of like a React or Vue app.
I really love web components.
I really like them too.
Oh, wow. Cool.
We were like contemplating, we're like, should we rebuild all of our design packs as web components? But we're like, that's not really practical. We will.
The ROI is
limited. Yeah, right.
You need like the web component to Liquid transformer or some crazy thing like that. But see, wouldn't it be cool if Shopify let you like server render those web components, you know? Because I'm sure lots of the things you do are SEO is important, right? And you kind of give that up if it's all in JavaScript.
Yeah. You can kind of do a combo. There's some themes that use web components in some interesting ways. So I think we would have most of the markup actually.
Yeah.
Not like, but then extra things like, because we go into like the full, how we're actually bringing in JavaScript into the sections, but it would be a natural fit to move over to web components, I think.
Yeah, that's one thing you don't think about with web components sometimes is that markup can be just there in the DOM, even if it's not hydrated with JavaScript or doing anything.
Yeah, but after rebuilding them in Web Components, I am a big fan of Web Components.
Nice.
All right. Let's move into the next section of the show, which is sick picks and shameless plugs. I don't know if you came prepared with a sick pick.
I did.
Yes. Lay it on us.
As a person with this hair and who likes to travel a lot, my sick pick is the bars of shampoo and conditioner.
Ooh. Which ones do you use?
Well, I am traveling with another girl with curly hair, so she's been letting me use hers because I didn't know. So I don't know what brand it is. But one of our actual users, like one of the users who uses Design Packs, is called the Black Travel Box, and they sell that for like traveling and, you know, to keep your hair looking good.
And it's a solid, so it doesn't count towards your liquid, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Wow. Liquid. But,
oh, hey, I didn't make that time.
but I thought with the amount of hair that I had, I was skeptical that I would be able to use it. Like, I thought maybe, you know, Wes's hair would work with a bar, but I didn't think that it would be that easy to wash my hair with a bar of shampoo, but it works pretty well.
Wow.
That's cool. I used to wash my hair with a bar of soap in high school because I wanted that, like, matted. I had like really long hair and I wanted it to be like matted, almost like dreaded.
And, I did too. Yeah.
Yeah. And like bar of soap was like a gross bar of soap was the thing to use because your hair got all like wiry and disgusting. Oh, that's good. Sick pick, Trudy. Good job. And what do you got for us?
I listened to a lot of podcasts, and I, although not many dev-related ones, interestingly. But the one that I've been listening to recently, although it's been around for a really long time, I've just never heard of it before, it's called Ologies.
Mm.
It's basically, it's just different, like literally what it sounds like. So.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
It's a very science-based, but the host is good and they have kind of like fun like little editing things. I don't know, it's good, it's very entertaining.
So it just describes the different ologies.
Like they interview different like experts and stuff. Like I listened to one on like capybaras. It was really good.
Yeah. Wes, you know whose favorite podcast this is? Caitlin from Syntax. It's her favorite podcast. She shared this with me a while ago. Yeah,
mathematology
illustrations right away.
Yeah. Oh, this would be a good game for our live episode. What is garology?
Garology?
Yeah. Or garology.
Garology. I don't know.
The study of gar, which is like a disgusting, like a gar? Almost an alligator fish. That's
you
wild.
Call it disgusting?
Yeah.
An alligator fish?
Yeah. Huh. Look it up.
I don't know if I could refer to an animal as disgusting unless it was.
I just did. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great podcast. Cool. And last thing we have here is shameless plugs. Plug away as many things as you like for our audience.
Design-packs.com.
Love it.
Also, we made a coupon code.
Oh, awesome.
Ooh. Yeah.
Syntax 25 for 25% off the monthly subscription.
Sick. And is that all uppercase or is that does
all
that matter?
All uppercase.
Cool. Beauty.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for all your time and laying all the Shopify info on us. We really appreciate it. And have a good one. Peace.
Thank you.
Thanks.